Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of What They Don't Tell You About the EU, streaming online on East London Radio. I'm Rosie McLeod. This is the show that gets ahead of the curve and tells you what the mainstream media doesn't about the European Union and Brexit. We look at one country in turn to find out more about its relationship with Europe and possible situation when Britain disaffiliates from the Union. So far, we've been to Estonia and Latvia. Those episodes are still available on the station's Mixcloud page. In this episode, we'll be looking at the third and final Baltic state, Lithuania. Like the other two Baltic states, Lithuania was under the control of the Soviet Union for decades. Annexed in the illegal occupation of 1940, it regained independence following the Soviet Union referendum that dissolved the USSR in 1991. Perhaps unsurprisingly, Lithuania had to hold a series of referendums to re-establish itself in the time following Stalin, or de-Stalinisation. Some of these were unsuccessful, with voter turnout at less than 40%. But one vote that did get people to the polls was the prospect of joining the European Union. In 2003, 90% of the voters voted in favour of the motion, and Lithuania became an EU member state in May 2004. It joined the Schengen area in 2007 and assumed the euro currency in January 2015. It was the last of the three Baltic states to join the eurozone, and, like the other two, did so after the eurozone crisis unfolded. The country held the presidency of the Council of the European Union in the second half of 2013, and currently 11 Lithuanian MEPs serve in the European Parliament. Additionally, 9 Lithuanians serve in the European Economic and Social Committee, a body that looks after the rights of workers and employers and oversees the groups governing these. Lithuania is currently a net receiver of EU funds, with 5.6% of its wealth resulting from EU investment. If you were listening to the Latvia show, you will have heard the Latvian ambassador to the UK, Baba Braže, talking about the EU-funded redevelopment of Riga Airport, and it's a similar situation in Lithuania. One of the key ways in which Lithuania has benefited from EU membership is the renovation of Kaunas Airport, as well as computer literacy courses and a sports centre in Droskany Kai, a town to the south of the country. The 5.6% of Lithuanian wealth driven by EU funding was one of the highest portions among EU members in 2013, so perhaps it's unsurprising to learn that Lithuanians are very pro-EU. Lithuanians have complained that the EU inconveniences them by making them change their clocks twice a year. That seems to be the worst they can say about it. I spoke to the Lithuanian ambassador to the UK, Askas Kazgarita, about Lithuanian support for the European Union. I'm so excited to be joined by Askas Kazgarita, who is the Lithuanian ambassador to the United Kingdom.
Hello.
Welcome to London.
First of all, let me start by saying that Lithuanians in general, they're very much pro-European. So we have perhaps one of the most important support rate for European Union. Up to now, about 70-75% of Lithuanian populations appreciate the European Union project. So, of course, when the referendum result was announced, we were very sad that the UK, which is our ally, is leaving us. It wants to leave us.
So could the Lithuanian enthusiasm for the EU be explained by the all-too-recent past, the dark days of the USSR that are yet to lose their sting of reality? Austria jumped at the chance to join the EU in 1995. Like Lithuania, the country has previously been subjected to Soviet occupation. Unlike Lithuania, Austria was only occupied for the 10 years after the Second World War, during which the Soviet Union was just one of four occupying powers, the others being Britain, America, and France. Austria's experiences of Soviet occupation are mitigated in comparison to Lithuania's, and yet Austria was very keen to join the EU. Does a history of a communist presence convince voters towards the European Union because it's seen as a democratic and all-round safer option? This is something I put to the ambassador.
Well, in fact, you put forward a very interesting aspect of how countries' histories relate to their willingness to be or not to be within a bigger conglomeration of states. The European Union in this instance. And indeed, we have been to the Soviet Union, and we are in the European Union. We can compare, and believe me, the comparison is landsliding to the European Union favor. Why? Because of the values like democracy, mm-hmm. like human rights, like freedom of whatever freedoms, of speech, of religion, of expression, of security and peace as well, of countries contributing voluntarily, not because they are occupied, but because they want to contribute to this common project. So that's why we still believe that the European Union is a good project and we want to contribute to it.
And the reason Lithuania has so many different political parties is because of its history of having had just one party.
Yeah, true. Some of the parties were re-established from the pre-Second World War mm-hmm. political scene, like traditional parties, like traditional Social Democratic Party or Christian Democratic Party. Some parties were created anew, like the Liberal Party. So, indeed, we enjoy multi-party system, and in the Lithuanian case, we always have a government of a few parties, 5-6 parties, sort of joint government. Yeah.
I mentioned Austria. Austria had the option and was able to voice its opposition to communism in 1945, very soon after the Second World War ended. But Lithuania didn't get the opportunity to say, we do not want to be under the Soviet Union until 1990. Is it fair to say that because Lithuania is still quite new to the European project, that the novelty hasn't worn off yet? There's less Euroscepticism because the Soviet Union is fresh in cultural memory and people remember what the alternative is like, and that's why there is so much Europhoria, so much love of being in the European Union in Lithuania.
Well, it's euphoria mixed with pragmatism. And to understand this, let me return back to 1938-39, just before the Second World War and before Lithuania was occupied by the Soviet Union. So at that time, in Lithuania, the predominant political thought was that of political neutrality. With all that, well, Lithuania is a small country. If we are neutral is in this situation of almost already the Second World War, if we remain neutral, so all the war, all the countries in war will somehow, well, will let us go, you know. We'll be not attacked by anybody because we do not threat anybody. And that was a huge mistake. That was a huge mistake. Lithuania was occupied at the first instance. The Soviet Union could do it. So we have learned this historical lesson. And we do believe that being in a union with similar, like-minded countries makes us stronger as well. So it's not only about emotion, it's not only about euphoria, it's also about interest. And very, very, I would say, vital national interest to ensure our security by being in a bigger entity.
You heard there, Her Excellency described how EU membership has brought Lithuania in line with Western values. In German, that's called Westorientierung. Such changes have also been called cultural change by academics and scholars. So has the EU brought any sort of cultural changes to Lithuania?
Well, I do believe that Lithuania is a contemporary society, though, yes, the traditional, well, the so-called traditional family values are still pretty well enrooted in Lithuanian psyche. We are a Catholic country, with Catholic values, so things like abortions or gay marriage are not automatically accepted in Lithuania, but now there are more and more tolerance towards these things. So yes, in a way you're right. It opened way to some new trends of thinking, yeah, of modern society. Modern society is changing a lot, yeah, in Europe it is changing, and it's changing in Lithuania. We used to have a big export to Russia, which become less and less, I would say, with the Russian sanctions, because you know that when Russia adopted sanctions, these were sort of targeted sanctions, yeah? So it hit the Lithuanian industries, which used to export most, and it hit, for example, Polish industries, which used to export most. So as a result of this, our exports to Russia much diminished. So there there is no comparison to what we do with the UK. I would wish our UK market expands, and it does. We make more than £1 billion pounds per year, and this is a good figure. We still do believe that Eurozone is a good project, believe it or not. And we do believe that we can make it better. We do believe that by joining, and we fulfill all the necessary criteria to be within Eurozone, which means that our economy is sound enough, so we can make a change. Yeah?
Following the British EU referendum on June the 23rd, 2016, the UK became somewhat divided. Many historians believe the country has not been this divided since the English Civil War. In response, a number of people have criticised the very use of a referendum, saying it's undemocratic. Notoriously, referendums split countries more than a general election because only one topic in isolation is up for discussion. However, if not for the 1991 referendum that ended the Soviet Union and freed the Baltic states, those countries would still be under the tyranny of Stalin. And without subsequent referendums, Lithuania would not have rebuilt itself as successfully as it did. So how does a diplomat whose country has benefited from referendums respond to the criticism of the UK's Brexit one?
You have correctly pointed out that we had a mixed history of successes and of successful referendums, so to say, and less successful. Yeah, I would say that in those referendums, where the question was a vital question pertaining to the country's future, all the participation has been very high, and then the voting, of course, the voting percentage was very high, even much higher, I would say, than in the British case. So I understand that the British referendum was very important for the British people. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, 60-something, yeah? People vote, the percentage of the population voted. So it was an important question to answer. However, what as an external observer I would criticize the election campaign. The referendum campaign. It was like an election mm-hmm. campaign because people were telling things that are not true. Simply, they were lies, and later on they acknowledged that these were lies, like NHS funding, for example. Yeah. So even those who told it later on acknowledged that it was not so, but it was too late already. So a lot of things that were said were not true things, and this is something wrong, yeah, in it. I mean, there's something should be corrected, that people are allowed to have opinions, but when it comes to telling the truth or not the truth, they shouldn't be allowed to lie during referendum campaign.
On that point, from the people I've been interviewing in my role as a EU correspondent, left and right, sorry, I'm doing it now, confusing it with an election, pro-EU and anti-EU, the in-camp and the out-camp cannot agree the time of day. The most simple basic facts, one says left and the other one says right. And, for example, has the EU ever signed off its accounts? The people who say let's stay in say yes. The people like Anne Main, they say the EU has never signed off its accounts. These discrepancies, I don't know where they've come from, I don't know how they're allowed to reverberate, and nobody seems to make any attempt to correct them. It's absolutely bizarre how the two camps, let's stay in and let's stay out, they cannot agree the time of day on the most fundamental grounding principles of the debate.
So you can understand to which extent it was a difficult decision to an ordinary man or woman in the street. Yeah?
Yes.
So there's no wonder that a lot of people voted out of emotion. Yeah, mm-hmm. Depending on which politician is to their liking, or what better slogan somebody put forward, you know, all these non-rational arguments they came into people's minds, and this is the in a way a danger perhaps for making such an important decision.
And the ambassador feels that one important point in particular was not discussed enough in the weeks leading up to the Brexit vote. The UK was voting on the European Union, But did the confines of the ballot box render us blinkered to the other countries, the wider world, when we went to the polls? I asked Her Excellency what Russia's actions mean for Lithuania, and how does a less unified Europe impact on Eastern European security?
An aspect of the Brexit future negotiations, this aspect is related to the foreign and security policy. So I believe that this aspect was somehow neglected in the referendum campaign, but nevertheless it's a very important aspect and we need to tackle it.
If Britain leaves and we can't pay in money for defence, does that leave Eastern Europe less stable in light of what's happening in Russia?
Yeah. Here I must say that, well, what you mean by Eastern Europe, we define Ukraine, Moldova, Belarus, Georgia, yeah? We don't put the NATO members into this, okay. Yeah? So let's make this distinction. So it means Russian aggression means aggression and change of posture within its neighbors. But then again, then the Ukrainian situation and the Lithuanian situation is inherently different because Lithuania is a member of NATO and Ukraine is not. Yeah? So let's not amalgamate then too much. But of course, in the big picture, yeah, Russia demonstrates its aggressivity for the last 10 years.
Since I spoke to the ambassador, there were fears that the 200,000 Lithuanians working and studying in the UK may have their futures here scuppered. That worry was put to bed just before Christmas when the UK granted EU citizens and their children the right to stay in a post-Brexit Britain. So there we have it. Lithuania, a very pro-EU country and a very globally aware nation. It still believes the Eurozone and the EU are good projects, despite the actions of their naysaying ally, the United Kingdom. It's also a country that would be very sad to see the UK leave the EU in 2019. That's all for now. Do tune in next time when we're off to Greece.